Good morning. It's a real privilege and pleasure to be here. And I can say that with all honesty. You never quite know what you get when you're invited to speak at a church, but it's a real blessing to be here with you. And it's lovely to be with Phil and Jan. I feel this is a bit like a marriage talk where you're half talking to a couple and trying to talk to a church at the same time. And it's been quite a while, hasn't it, Phil and Jan? We've known you because we served with you in Brazil. In fact, I took over the leadership from Phil when Phil's time came to an end, and I was voted in, and I remember Phil's words to me on that day. "I'm so pleased you've been voted in, but there's something I need to tell you." And he went on to explain to me there was a pastoral issue, which turned out to be the worst pastoral issue I've had to deal with in I don't know how many years. So thank you for that, Phil. Perhaps more seriously, I don't think I ever thanked you for all the support you gave to Simone and I when we came to Brazil, and especially on the leadership, so thank you for that. It has been quite a while, hasn't it? I think when you first went out, the order of service, and this is part of it, had to be written on a typewriter. By my reckoning, it is something like 11,495 days ago. I hope that makes you feel old. 31 years, 5 months and 20 days. And we know it was quite a long time because on the back of the same thing, you invited people to another service afterwards where there were going to be slides. The young people may not even know what slides are, but they are so much better than PowerPoint. I also know that it's been quite a while because when I was rooting around the office, I found your file. And there's some old photos on it. I've never known Phil without a beard, but there he is. What do you speak about on a day like today? What do you speak about after 30 years of ministry? What do you speak about? The original service was opened by someone called Paul Price, and he gave the welcome and he gave the notices, and then the whole congregation read the Great Commission at the start of your service. And I noticed when I sat down today that it's actually engraved at the back of the church as well. That's how your service started. And I wondered, when people are coming back, what text do you talk on? Is there, to use the words of somebody earlier today, a decommissioning text? Is there a great decommissioning that says something like, sit at home and put your feet up, have a nice life, relax and enjoy the later years? And to my surprise, the Bible does not contain such a text, and there are some texts that sort of imply some of it, I suppose. You could look at Matthew 25 if you wanted to. Verses 14 to 13, the parable of the bags of gold, where it says, "Well done, my good and faithful servant." And I think there is an element of that in your life. Well done, my good and faithful servant. Over 30 years of service in Brazil. What else can you say? And I think, "Well done, my good and faithful servant," actually sums up to me something of you two as people. We served alongside you, and they were words that I would use of you to say that you were faithful, dependent, and servant-hearted through 30 years of good times, bad times. And I can say the same about Cheam Baptist Church, actually. You already alluded to you were here for 5 years, and they supported you for 30 years. Well done, my good and faithful church. They either really love you or desperate to keep you away. I'll let you work out which one that was. But the problem with texts like this is they're actually implied for the end of our life when Jesus calls us home or when he comes back. They're not texts for the middle of our life. What do we talk on this morning? There are no retirement texts in the Bible. There is little about retirement in the Bible. And I think as a Baptist church, you probably already know the next quote, but Charles Spurgeon said this in our lifetime. "We are all immortal until our work is done." So there's a sense that we are celebrating this morning, and we celebrate your retirement from the mission agency, but at the same time, we recognize that this is not the end. God has more for you. God has much more for you as you go forward. So what do we talk about this morning? What I want to do is actually return to where we started. I want to return to the Good Commission and just talk about that for a couple of minutes. Let's just read the text first. from Matthew 28, 18 to 20. Jesus said to them, "All authority in heaven and earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And surely I am with you always until the end of the year, the end of the age." Part of the reason I wanted to talk about this text is I think that's what you've been doing with your life. I think that is a good text that sums up where you're at. But I think there are things we can learn from it too, and I think there are things we can learn from your lives that are helpful for us as individuals. And when we look at the text, the first thing you have to recognize is it is not a text taken in isolation. You need to know what comes before it. And what comes before it is about Jesus' life, his crucifixion, his death, and his resurrection. And when the disciples discover that, he then goes on to say, this is what you are supposed to do with it. You're called to go out and make disciples. And I just wonder when I look at my own life, and I say this all, I compare it to yours, how much I actually do that. In my day job, I head up Latin Link in the UK. So I have the auspicious title of CEO. I don't really know what that means, but that's the title I get. And I got invited to an event of the CEO of the mission agencies recently. So I sort of went along to this. And two people gave statistics about the church, and the church in the UK, and quite a few of the statistics were quite depressing. Oh, this church, this area is in decline, that's in decline, less people going to church, and all this sort of thing. And they also gave some really positive statistics about things that are happening in church. Certain church areas are growing, certain churches are growing. It's great to see so many people here this morning. But although they put a positive spin on it, I could not help but think afterwards, when I leave my front door, I meet person after person after person that does not know Jesus Christ. And I cannot get away from that. You can put as positive spin on it as you want, but as you leave this building, you will find so many people that don't know Jesus. And I was thinking about that in a later session and sort of reflecting on my own life, and, you know, in many ways, how bad I am about telling people about Jesus. And I asked these different CEOs to stand up and say what was going on in their mission agencies or in their lives at the time. And they gave various stories about, you know, pastoral problems or problems in mission or God has provided. But one lady stood up and she struck me what she said. She said, "I just want to tell you a story. I'd arranged with some friends to go for a walk on a Saturday, and they turned up at some car park at 9 o'clock, and they're putting their walking boots on. And another lady comes up to them and says, 'Excuse me, I was supposed to go for a walk with some friends, but it turns out I've got the wrong time and I've missed my group. Do you mind if I come with your group?' Now, if somebody said that to me, I'd probably say no. Because nobody in their right mind asks to go for a walk in the woods with a group of people they don't know. But they said yes. And over the next couple of hours, the lady asked what this person did, and she explained she worked for a mission agency, and then she explained why she worked for him, and then she explained about Jesus. And when they eventually get back to the car park, she felt inspired to say, 'Would you like to accept Jesus in your life this morning?' And the woman said, 'You know what, I think I do.' And there in the car park, she gave her life to Christ." I mean, that's amazing, isn't it? And I think when I look at this text, this is what it's about. Because if you were to read it in the original language, the emphasis in the text is on making disciples. It is not necessarily on the go. There is a call in our lives as we go through our lives to make disciples of other people, to share the faith we have with others. A better translation might actually be, as you're going about your daily life, make disciples. And I can't help wondering, when I think about the Great Commission that's written about at the back of the church, that's already been alluded to several times, are people rejecting Jesus Christ in this country because they don't want to know him? There are people not accepting Christ because we don't tell them, and I'm looking at myself here as well. Are people open if we want to talk to them is a good question, isn't it? And when I look at Phil and Jan's life, what I discover is two people who have a passion for sharing Jesus with other people. Before they're ever involved in missions, they're in university. and they're involved with the navigators. And just last Sunday, somebody was telling me how much a young person telling me how much the navigators had affected their lives. And Phil and Jan were involved in that, sharing with other people about Jesus, taking time to do it. Jan was trained as a nurse and Phil was trained as a chemical engineer. I believe he worked for Shell. You probably don't want to mention that too loudly in certain... Esso. I knew it was one of the petrol companies. You probably don't want to mention that too loudly because number one, it's a petrol company, and number two, nobody will know who Esso is probably. But they had good careers ahead of them, didn't they? A great future. And yet God stirred something, as we've heard this morning. And they gave it all up to do the great commission of sharing their lives and sharing Jesus' life with other people. And a couple of weeks ago, I WhatsApped Jan and I said a couple of questions. And Jan sent me some WhatsApps back. And one of them was, what were the challenges? And I was expecting Jan to say one or two things, but she actually said this. Challenges. The early years of language study and adaptation were quite challenging. And I thought, that's amazing, isn't it? The early years. Do you see what's happening there? Not there was a bad day. Being involved in the Great Commission does not mean that our lives will be easy, or even that we'll always enjoy them. There is something for us to take from that, isn't it? And I'm pleased that Phil and Jan stuck with it. I'm pleased they stuck with it during the early years when it was difficult. Learning a language is hard. Learning a culture is even more difficult. When they work with children, I'm pleased they stuck with it when Phil worked with the student movement and covered the state of São Paulo and Mato Grosso do Sul, which Phil sort of said, oh, I nipped out in my car and I was responsible for these things. That's an area twice the size of the UK. And I think the car bit is misleading because some of them were coach rides, and some of those coach rides I think were really long. And I remember when Jan was at home doing her work with the youth and Phil was off somewhere else, you know, long, long ways away. It was not always easy, but the passion for Christ, for the Great Commission, comes out in that. They're also involved in youth camps, and I love that they've got a sense of humour. And there's a lovely quote from one of their things. This is from 1994. Weary from late nights, thoroughly sunburned, muscle fatigue from playing too much football, volleyball and badminton, which is a sport they introduced to Brazil. We're not so young these days. That's 1994. There is a sense that they were people that caught the Great Commission in the way that we need to catch the Great Commission and were prepared to do something. And I'm really inspired that they moved to Sane to work there. And there's a good reason for that. Prior to them going there, a year or two before, maybe more than that, Simone and I were actually invited to be lecturers there. We ended up in a different Bible college and we bent two wheels trying to get there in our car. Is ends of the earth. And we felt we were city dwellers, and yet they went there because they felt God had called them there. And there's something else that I think we can learn from that time in their life. They were both lecturers in the college there, and Phil said that he became the director afterwards, which is really interesting for me. I'll come back to that in a second. Phil also wrote a book at some around then, and Jan has also written a book as well, but I don't have a copy of the cover of that. The book on tent making and discipleship. And they were lecturers in the college, but whilst they were lecturers in the college, they also decided to become the director of the college, and Jan got involved in InterServe, and she got involved with the missionary kids, and she also did all the safeguarding for the college, and there was loads of other stuff, and I can't help wondering why. There are two quirks to missionary life. The first one is, you have the only occupation in the world when you get more children, you get a larger salary, because more people send you money. Most people's go the other way. But the other quirk of mission life is that when you take on more responsibility, you don't get anything extra in terms of financial reward. Why would people do that? Why would Phil and Jan, when they could have just been lecturers, choose to take on increasingly difficult and challenging roles? Well, I think it's because of this, which I think is a key phrase for all of our life. The place God calls you to is where your deep passion and the world's deep hunger meet, and there is a need for us to find that place in our lives if we want to outwork the Great Commission. The place God calls you to is where our deep passion and the world's deep hunger meet, and you can see that in their lives, in the things that they've committed to. from their early prayer cards, discipleship making and evangelism in local churches, Sunday schools, when working with local children, development of student leaders and later missionaries. It's Great Commission stuff, isn't it? And when you find that place in your life where God is calling to, where your gifts and skills fit, and you're out working the Great Commission, you find that that becomes the thing that inspires you and drives you forward. I asked them for a couple of highlights, and they could have picked weddings or holidays or anything. What did they pick? The thing that God had called them to do. Phil, developing the Luke Gospel Project and seeing it used effectively. This was a project to produce Bible studies and other resources for people to evangelize them and to disciple them. That's what God does when you find the place he wants. He puts on your heart a passion for his work. For Jan, and she's alluded to this as well before, working with teenagers in Presidente Prudente and seeing so many come to faith and grow in their discipleship. Isn't that something that we would like in our lives, where we have a passion for God that drives us forward, where we see people's lives change as a result of it? And I look at myself, I don't want that to take it, come away as a condemning thing, but rather as something that is a joy to do. There is a really great quote by a guy called Anthony DeMello, and he says this. He says, don't give in to the demands of Christ. Give in to the demands of the love of Christ. I think that's really key, because if you're driven by the demands of something, it becomes a burden. But if you're driven by the demands of love for something, it becomes a joy. There is a sense that we need to be able to find that in our lives if we want to outwork what God is calling us to do. And we can never lose our first love. I don't think Phil and Jan have ever lost their first love. They've always had this first love for Christ that has caused them to go further. In my own church, somebody was talking a couple of weeks ago, and they were saying that they grew up as a missionary kid in the northeast of Brazil, not with our mission. And because they lived in an area with virtually no electricity, at night you'll go outside and the Milky Way would be stunning. And when people came to see them, they would like stand outside in awe. And Debbie, the girl, would be like, ah, it's still there. There's a sense that sometimes in our Christian life, that is what happens. When we first come to Christ, we have a huge passion and we want to tell our friends about it. After a while, it becomes a normality. If we want to be Great Commission people, we have to maintain that first love and that first wonder and that first desire to share with other people. And it's important that we have that, and it's important that we have that passion to be in a place, because life is not always easy. There will be setbacks. The first years were hard. Things did not always work out. Phil wrote in 1994, remember the idea of the monthly men's prayer breakfast? Well, it hasn't brought in the crowds, but we're not quick to give up, and so we'll try a different emphasis. Their passion led them forward in that, and actually the situation didn't really improve, because in September of the year, same year, they wrote in a prayer letter, the men's prayer breakfast had to take a graceful exit from our calendar. Despite numerous attempts, it did not seem to get going. If you were driven by a burden or a sense of obligation, when things don't work out, you tend to give up. If you are driven by a passion and a love, you will stick with it and you will find another way of doing the things. And I think that is a lesson for us all. We need to be in that place God calls us to, where we can use our gifts and our skills for the kingdom. And one of the challenges is that so often in life, we just wander through life seeing what happens rather than seeking a place. This was not written on the paper, but I'm quite inspired by Phil, who said, I had set aside time on a Saturday morning to pray. And presumably Jan did something similar sometime before when she wrote down the date. If we want to find where God wants us, we have to put ourselves in a place where we can hear from God. And we've also got to be prepared to move in some way. Another thing that strikes me about the Great Commission and when I think about Phil and Jan's life is this. It says, make disciples and teach them to obey everything that I have commanded you. Phil and Jan started out evangelizing people. Well, actually, evangelizing people is quite simple, because you don't need to know a huge amount to share your faith with somebody else. I have sinned, I have fallen short, I am not going to heaven. If I accept Jesus, I'm going to heaven. Do you want to accept Jesus in your life? It's quite easy to sum up the Christian faith, but to make disciples is a whole new thing. And to teach them to obey everything that Christ has commanded is another thing. There is a sense that if we want to be Great Commission people, we have to be prepared to be people who go deeper. You cannot lead somebody unless you are in front of them. There's a need for us to put ourselves in that place. Phil and Jan, although they'd already been involved in evangelism, they went to Bible college for a year. They learned a language, they learned a culture. When they moved into teaching, they did further study. There is a sense that we have to be there to walk forward with God and be in a better place every year, or a deeper place every year, if we want to lead others along the journey. And finally, when I think of Phil and Jan, I think of this. I think Phil and Jan, and I say this with all honesty, are examples of Great Commission people from the way that they have outworked their lives and what they've done with their lives. From their evangelism, their discipleship, from their teaching and their training, from their sending missionaries. But they're not the first. In our own mission, we can trace the history back to 1910. They weren't around quite in those days. But you can trace mission back before that. They are in a long line of missionaries, and God took them out from here and he has brought them back. So with their passion for training others and involved in mission, let me leave you with this question. Who takes their place? What is God calling each and every person to do? And I'm not just talking about working in Brazil. Where is God calling you to be? What is God calling you to do? Because I said before, it's easy to wander through life and sometimes trip on something that's good to do. But it's a whole other thing to grasp the Great Commission and say, I have the truth. How do you want me to outwork that Great Commission? Where do you want to be? Because the Christian faith, and actually mission, is only ever one generation away from dying. And we're only here today because somebody told us, and there is a call on our lives to pass that on to somebody else in some way, shape, or form. What's God calling us to do? Amen.